Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Safe Humane Chicago. Oh my gosh. I was there at the very beginning of this, but what they've done is quite incredible and doesn't get enough credit. I don't think it's talked about enough, but we will talk about it and talk with co-founder Cynthia Bathurst. I am so excited to hear this news. She is now the president of the Anti-Cruelty Society, probably walking around with security guards and everything. Maybe during the convention she had security. I don't know. Darlene Duggan, you've been around the shelter world in Chicago. I've known you for a long time. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much, Steve. Yes, it has been a long time. We don't need to go over the years in particular.
No.
Suffice it to say, I've been around in animal welfare in Chicago for quite some time now.
And there's a couple of things about this. I mean, you know, obviously, you know the market. You've been doing this for, I will ask you, how many years? And kind of like, what's your story in animal welfare that led you to be the president? Anti-Cruelty is one of the most prestigious animal shelters in the nation.
Yes, yes. Thank you for all that. It is. And I am it's such an honor at this point to be chosen to lead this organization. I started my career in animal welfare actually working for Anti-Cruelty Society. I had come out of a graduate school program thinking that I was going to go into environmental health at the time. And just serendipitously, there was a position open with Anti-Cruelty. And so I jumped on it. The reason I jumped on that position was because I was actually a volunteer with the organization. After I graduated college, I had found I had so much time on my hands, and what better way to spend that time when you're a recent college grad than to volunteer at your local animal shelter. But Steve, and this is the part where when I try and tell this story, I usually get a little choked up, so we'll see if I can get through it. But the whole reason I was volunteering at Anti-Cruelty after my college years was because my family, the day before Christmas, back in third grade, my mom and dad said to my sister and I, hey, let's go adopt a dog. Are you guys ready for a dog? And so they piled us into our minivan and we drove down to the shelter that day and took home what I consider to be the world's most wonderful chocolate lab mix. And so Anti-Cruelty Society has been a part of my family and has been a part of my story since I was literally in third grade. So it feels so incredible to now be leading this organization and, you know, and taking it into our next 125 years.
You're going to be there that long. Interesting.
Well, it feels like I have been here that long already. So what's another 125, right?
And along the way, stops at other animal shelters around Chicago where you have filled a variety of roles. Then coming back to Anti-Cruelty, I don't know, what, a couple of years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So like I said, I started my career in animal welfare with Anti-Cruelty, and then I left to learn animal sheltering and animal welfare from a different perspective. So I've worked for municipal groups. I've worked for small cat shelters. I spent a lot of time with Pet Health, which is an organization that offers microchips and insurance and animal software. And when I was in that role, I really got a good view of other shelters. I was an enterprise client representative. So that meant that I worked on the software side with over 80 different shelters across the nation. So I really got a good understanding of how everybody does animal sheltering a little bit differently and how there are many, many different ways to approach animal sheltering. And so I like to think that I kind of collected all of that external information and then brought it back to Anti-Cruelty about 4 years ago as the operations vice president and now as the president.
Yeah. Anti-Cruelty, I know moving forward, wants to. So the role of animal shelters, even since you've been in the business and the industry, has changed. It's now about not only protecting and serving the animals, but the entire families that live with those animals and the community as a whole. And I know that there are in Chicago, there's like a void of animal shelter options on the south and southwest side. All we have in the city, anyway, is animal care and control on Southwestern Avenue. Very, very important cog in the wheel, if you will. But other than that, there's nothing an anti-cruelty long-term, I believe, wants to say we need to step up and do something about this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And there is, in many ways, we're lucky in the city of Chicago and our surrounding areas to have this ecosystem of animal sheltering approaches. We do have our municipal group in Chicago, and some surrounding suburbs and municipalities have their own. We have a lot of brick and mortar shelters, some large like anti-cruelty, some a little bit smaller and more specific. And then we have a bunch of rescue organizations that focus more on foster-based associations for the animals. And then that whole ecosystem really contributes and supports the community, the community's needs for their animals. And you're absolutely right. There is a lack of resources in some parts of our city. So it is the dream of anti-cruelty to be able to kind of fill those gaps and support those communities for whatever it is they need, whether it's medical attention, whether it's sheltering resources or it's humane investigations, all of the options that they need. And long term, eventually, we would love to be able to partner with other community organizations to bring even jobs to the community as well and start training the next generation of animal shelter professionals.
Well, I don't think that's going to be long term. I think that's going to happen sooner than later. Because the other thing that's been going on, I don't know that I might have been talking to you about this actually, sort of off when we were just talking at some point about the finances, that part of the deal. Animal shelters need to stay alive financially in order to feed the animals, to take care of the animals. And that's getting more and more difficult, in part because of inflation and rising cost. But the most significant rising cost is insurance, as it turns out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is one of the kind of, I think, largest threats to animal welfare right now is the rising cost of insurance. So in order to run an organization, you need basic insurance coverage. And animals come with inherent risk. So regardless of our safety protocols and all of the SOPs and training that we provide to both our staff and volunteers and even to the public, there still is risk involved. And we're at a point in time right now where our insurance costs are rising. And that's a big challenge for a lot of groups. And so that's something to consider as we are navigating the waters of financial stability, of fundraising, of you know, making sure that our organizations remain solvent so that they're here for future generations. Insurance plays a big part in that conversation right now. So as a leadership team within the organization, as well as just in animal shelters across the country, that is a hot topic for us at the moment.
Yeah, I know it. I want to talk about some more hot topics, but specific to Chicago. And we will do that when we come back with the quite new president of anti-cruelty, Darlene Duggan, here on WGN. Darlene Duggan is the president of anti-cruelty. All right, so during the pandemic, shelters, including your own, said, and I quote, "Help!" And people did, because you didn't know, nobody knew, and this isn't only in Chicago, it was all over the country. In fact, greatly throughout the world, animal shelters had no clue if people could come in to feed the animals, to care for the animals in any way, and said to the community that they happened to be in, whether it be London, England. I think there's a city in Wisconsin called London. So London, Wisconsin, if I'm right about that, it didn't matter where. People stepped up and throughout every community adopted animals. Now, the good news is, people found themselves with animals who often or didn't previously have a pet. This could be their first pet. And a record number of those, a record number of multi-pet homes, and a record number of pets in America. The downside is that, okay, a couple of years later, everyone who wanted a pet now has a pet or pets. There are more animals in the shelter that the shelter, in some cases, depending on the community, has space for. So tell me where Chicago is with all of that and why so many of the shelters are kind of filling up.
Yes, we do. We do have a little bit of a population crisis on our hands, and we were lucky during the pandemic. The public really did come to the rescue, no pun intended, of helping animal shelters literally clear their shelters, especially in that early stages of uncertainty. We pulled back a lot on the services that we were offering because we just didn't know what was happening with the pandemic. So a lot of people adopted, a lot of people fostered. It was wonderful. And then as we slowly started to open up again as a community, so did the services and the need for animal sheltering services out there. So we have been filling up tremendously. And again, whether that's because of rising inflation and cost of living, whether that's just because more people are going back to work in the office or, you know, a variety of reasons, we're not quite sure within animal welfare. But the reality is that at this moment in time, our intake is exceeding the amount of animals that we're able to place again through adoption back into the community. So we're creating this kind of bubble in between of overpopulation, and it is leading to a deterioration of the behavior of the animals that's in our care. It's leading to a lot of burnout for staff and for volunteers. So it's kind of a perfect storm right now that, again, anti-cruelty, City of Chicago, across the nation, that a lot of groups are trying to work through and trying to find solutions to. But that's an area that we're currently struggling. So we are trying to promote adoption as much as we possibly can. We're trying to engage the public and find additional support for fostering and for volunteering. We're working on different protocols for socialization and enrichment for the animals that are in our care, because we're finding that they're staying longer with us. The average length of stay have gone up a considerable and significant amount for these animals. So we're doing all that we can to make sure that we are taking care of the needs of the animals as well as the community that needs our support.
To confirm what you just said, according to a story just out in Animal Health Digest, pet parents have been saying this now for a couple of years regarding inflation in pet products, particularly pet food and veterinary services. Inflation of pet-related products exceeds overall inflation, even going back 5 years. A couple of reasons for that that they state, but the reasons don't matter if it costs more than what people, Darlene, can afford.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know even with my own dogs at home, my own pets rather at home, that yes, my bill at the veterinarian is higher. My bill for their food and their treats and their toys are higher. So it hits everywhere and it hits everybody. And again, that's one of the reasons why we try to provide as many resources as we possibly can. So we do have a low-cost community clinic that does basic and wellness care for animals. We do offer support via pet food pantries and wellness care and vaccine clinics, so that there does provide some alternatives to people for caring for their pets.
But you need support in order to offer these things. And it turns out you've got a big fundraiser coming up that has to do with drinking.
Yes, absolutely. It is called Pour Your Heart Out, and it's going to be held this year on Thursday, September 26th at Sarah Bande in the Roscoe Village neighborhood. We're very excited. This is our first time at this location.
Where is this, Darlene?
It's Sarah Bande in Roscoe Village. All of the information is on our website, anticruelty.org/pour. You can buy tickets. You can check out the venue. You can see what other vendors are going to be there. But Steve, essentially, this is a tasting, a spirited tasting, I'd like to call it, which attracts hundreds of guests from across the metropolitan area. We're going to do alcoholic mocktail testings from local wineries, breweries, distilleries. We'll have fabulous hors d'oeuvres, incredible entertainment, a silent auction, and my favorite part, and I think most people's favorite part, there will be puppies to play with there and available for adoption.
You know, I think that is my favorite part also, but my second second favorite was tasting the bourbons last year.
Yes, right.
Unfortunately, I'm going to be out of town speaking at a veterinary meeting. However, you can walk around from table to table to table. Sometimes it's, as you point out, mocktails. I kind of avoided those. I don't know why. Other times it's wine, beers, bourbon, whiskey, all those things, depending on where you are. And many of them actually, in fact, most of them are homegrown Chicago companies.
Yeah, absolutely. We try to include and partner with as many local Chicago organizations as we possibly can to promote not only just the animals and anti-cruelty and the work that we do, but also our local partners as well.
Well, that's great. And anticruelty.org to learn more about it?
Yep, anticruelty.org/poor, specifically for our event, but anticruelty.org to learn about all of the facilities and all of the services that we provide to the community.
We only have like a minute or two left, but very quickly, because this is a huge issue as well, that I know anti-cruelty has been involved with politically, if you will, and that is as far as renters or condominium association saying, you cannot have a dog, or you can, but not if the dog is over 12.2 pounds. I mean, the weight limits are kind of arbitrary. You do offer help to people who have sudden adjustments in their rent. And I think this is one of the services. Also, domestic violence is up. And they say it was the pandemic within the pandemic. And when there's violence to people, there usually is to animals, people feel, I need a safe place to put that animal. Anti-cruelty can provide for that too. These are two services among many others that I don't think people know about.
Yeah, absolutely. We do provide pet deposits for folks that are trying to get into a new apartment or a new housing facility that requires a deposit to keep their pets. So that's a way that we support, you know, that financial barrier of being able to come up with all of that money up front. So that's one of the programs that we do here as well. And we do offer safe housing for groups or people who are experiencing domestic violence, or even for individuals who are hospitalized for a period of time, or their own health is at risk, or maybe they had a house fire, or they've been displaced from their housing. A variety of reasons why people might need temporary care for their animal. We do offer a program like that where we partner with other local organizations that provide housing. We provide potentially foster families to watch that animal for them as well. We do some medical care for the people that are in that crisis moment in life as well. So a variety of things that we can do to help the public in either of those situations.
Anticruelty.org to learn more. Darlene, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate your time.
If you listen to the Sunday afternoon show I host on WGN, I had the honor and privilege, and I think it was an honor and privilege, to speak with Dr. Anthony Fauci about his new book, On Call. But we also spoke about cats. That's right, you heard me right, cats. And how cats, or at least a disease that cats get, called feline infectious peritonitis, all rolls into one of the treatments for COVID-19. And Dr. Fauci himself was excited about it. He hadn't even heard about it. I want to replay that part of the interview on the Pet Show. It makes perfect sense, right? And we're going to be doing that next week. In addition to that, we'll talk to the two fun ladies from the Cat Behavior Alliance, Rita Reimers and Linda Hall. And they once worked with Richard Simmons. Somehow, I bet you'll be able to tell that. That's next week. She is Cynthia Bathurst, the co-founder of Safe Humane Chicago, which is a groundbreaking organization. It began right here in Chicago. Doing what, Cynthia?
Actually, you should know quite well, Steve Dale. Thank you for having me, because you were right there at the beginning with us on a board where we transitioned from a group called the Dog Advisory Work Group, DAWG. No, that is not how I say DOG. And we were trying to share public spaces wisely, and we decided to make it into something that involved all the agencies and organizations in the city in order to really help dogs and their people live well together and to help those who were in need. And that was Safe Humane.
Yeah. And one of the focuses of Safe Humane Chicago are what are called court case dogs. Can you explain what they are and the change that happened legally even to protect these dogs, really because of you and because of Safe Humane Chicago?
And because of a huge number of people, including you and your audience, because we were able to partner with the Chicago Police Department, Cook County State's Attorney's Office, Cook County Sheriff's Office, and the Circuit Court, as well as with many, many rescue groups, awesome rescue groups. And what we did was realize that dogs who had been confiscated, actually rescued by law enforcement, and then taken out of the very cruel situations in which they were, and then they were impounded by Chicago Animal Care and Control for the most part, and they were just sitting there forever. And we found out that dogs were there for 3 years, 2 years, 4 years, all sorts of times, and never gotten out of their cage because they were, quote, evidence. And what we did was we were able to look at the real laws, look at what was possible, and we renamed those dogs, not evidence dogs because they're evidence only at a moment in time, but as court case dogs because they were dogs associated with criminal court cases against their owners or guardians. And what we were able to do was take dogs who had been in animal care and control for so long and where only 2%, I'll tell you, 1-2% got out alive because they either deteriorated so badly in their cages, or they were seen as damaged goods, or they thought that they were pit bulls, which means that they were bad and vicious, which is not true. And over the course of time, with all these partners, we were able to put 1,406 dogs into homes, and we had a 98% live release rate, as shelters like to say it. 98% of them got out alive and went into homes.
Yeah, which is in the no-kill territory. So you went from one extreme really to another. You know, let's explain this a little better so people understand. So if the police have to go into a home because, let's say, there's drug dealers going on there or something, and it really doesn't matter what maybe there was a murder there. It doesn't matter what the criminal activity happened to be. If the dog was not involved directly, the dog had nothing to do with the drugs being in the house or the criminal activity of any sort, but the dog would be held previously as evidence. And then you point out the dog would be held for a very long time until the case went to court. And then the case was often delayed and delayed and delayed, as happens. And the dog would just be sitting there. Am I describing this right?
Yes, you are. And that's exactly what happened in it. And even in quote, dog fighting cases, many of those dogs were dogs that were being held and used for breeding and not being fought, although there were certainly dogs that were forced to fight or were used for other nefarious purposes. So, yes, but most of them were any kind of criminal case. And they were treated as if they were part of the whole crime, and they were not.
Right. And by changing the law, so when you went in to meet, because I was in a couple of those meetings with you, and my God, I remember once we went in, the superintendent of police was Phil Klein at the time. And he greeted us like we were celebrities, and he's giving us bumper stickers and coffee mugs that say Chicago Police. And he was so open, more than open to the idea. It's like, why didn't we think of this earlier? It makes common sense.
Yes, it does. And I think it's just we needed to gather our forces, reach out to everyone and say, hey, here we are as Safe Humane. We're willing to work with all these people, help collaborate and bring together folks to make sure that they're treated humanely when they are being held or when they're waiting to be rehomed. They're treated humanely and well. And then also that we can celebrate the rescues who recognize them for what they are, just dogs who may need some help or who just need another home. And it was amazing. And the Chicago Police Department were delighted because it not only helped them solve other crimes, more people were looking at that, but it also helped what everyone saw as the victims, the dogs.
Yeah.
And they were big lovers of the animals.
So let's fast forward the clock to today. If the same thing happens, there's something that goes on in a home and the police come in and the dog is there and they take the dog to animal control. Today, how quickly can that dog, once the dog is vetted, you know, for veterinary care and all those things, how quickly can that dog be potentially adopted out if there's no one from the crime victim or the criminal's family to do so?
Actually, immediately, if all the vetting has been done and the animal has been relinquished or has been ordered by the court to become animal care and control property, then immediately that dog can be adopted out or transferred, which is more often the case. I have to say we've had a little backlash recently about how long it took for a couple of the dogs, but people rallied. The rescue community was awesome, and those dogs are in homes. So
it's amazing what you've done, not only regarding Chicago, over 1,000 dogs, but also nationally. Other communities have looked at what Chicago has done, Cynthia, and said, well, what are we doing? We're doing this wrong, too. We need to do what they're doing as more animals will be adopted. And by the way, from a politician or a public official's point of view, it's actually a savings in money. The fewer euthanasias there are, there's a cost to that financially. So the fewer there are, the less it costs animal control. Although you and I aren't looking at the cost, we're looking at what's right for the dogs.
That's right. And actually, and the cost is great to even more than that. So you raise a great point. The cost is also every day the dogs are there, especially now when dogs are dying because there's so many coming into shelters. Every day the dogs are there, not only does it cost feeding and care for the staff, but it also takes up a cage space when they could otherwise be out there and adjusting to their homes and becoming great community members like our court case dogs have. Therapy dogs, just plain companions, ambassador dogs, you name it.
Yep. And you've been awarded, which we'll talk about when we come back for these efforts. And we will come back next with Cynthia Bathurst of Safe Humane Chicago on WGN. Cynthia Bathurst is the co-founder, I believe, of Safe Humane Chicago, and awarded for the work we've been talking about, saving dogs. The American Veterinary Medical Association, for example, several years ago awarded you with their Humane Award. And you've received other awards, but my guess, knowing you, is that the greatest reward of all is that you've found homes for well over 1,000 dogs. Many of those dogs, if not nearly all of them, otherwise might have been euthanized. And other cities are doing the same. So Lord knows how many dogs have been saved, which is wonderful.
It is wonderful. And also those dogs have become a part of the community, our communities, which is where they should be. And not relegated to something that means they lose their lives or are just warehoused somewhere.
So, Cynthia, here's something else, and thank you for the transition, that you care so much about, and I've talked about this as well. If we are more humane to animals, let me back up a step. We know, and I'm on the advisory board or whatever you call it, for an organization that looks at the link, as it's called, between violence to animals and violence to people. And that's actually what it's called. It's called the link. And there really is a link there. Law enforcement uses that very terminology. We've had Phil Arkow, who runs the organization, on this show many, many times. So if that link is there, and it is, my thinking, and I know you've talked about this too, is that if we are more humane, the opposite, if we are more humane to animals, maybe we will be kinder to one another. And one thing I know Safe Humane focuses on is working in deep in communities, even with religious leaders, to teach others how to teach others how to be humane. And in many cases, people previously weren't.
Yes, and I think that part of it is almost like giving people permission to be being humane, to being kind, does not translate into weakness. It actually translates into strength, because you now not only have the kind of love and bond that humans and dogs can have with each other, but you can also practice hearing and listening and caring for another. And that can't help but translate. Our Lifetime Bonds program, which you know about at various facilities, does just that, where we bring animals and people who've been impacted by violence together to heal and to learn.
You know, oftentimes people that are doing good don't get the press, don't get the credit. And you know, many times I've talked about the work that you do and the work the organization does and the volunteers for Safe Humane Chicago does. But I think it's incredibly important because it's on the ground. It's, as I say, in the churches, even in communities where you preach a new gospel, if you will. And I think, yeah, talk about that.
I think that what happens is that if people can understand that all dogs are individuals, just like all humans are individuals, we can look at the individuals in front of us and figure out how that bond works and helps communities, then those values are already there in our churches, our schools, our communities, our block clubs. And what we do is try to make sure, or try to help them do what they need best to make their community safer and more humane. And that may sound like a soapbox, but individual by individual, block by block, it's happened. And so all those places that you've mentioned where we've gone and we want to continue going and we want the nation to know about is right there.
Is that the goal, to have other cities in a organized fashion do exactly what you've been doing with Safe Humane Chicago in Chicago, but in other cities as well?
Absolutely. And we've already started that process. Some people may see that as just, well, that's just consulting and that's just, you know, marketing sort of things. No, it's not. It's taking, when dogs are dying, we need to pass on successful programs that have been proven to help the dogs and, of course, their people. And that's what we've done over these last 10 to 15 years. So we need to do what we can do to help the dogs and their people. So we'll share what we've done and empower them to do things, and we'll learn from each other.
Yeah. And I know you've spoken at many conferences about what Chicago has done in this regard. So I'm glad to scream out anytime what Safe Humane Chicago does. And friends, you can help because you have an event coming up, a benefit, correct?
Yes, our Diamonds in the Rough, RUFF event on September 12th. It's going to be at Castaways at North Avenue Beach. We'd love to take a look at our website, safehumanechicago.org, or go to our Facebook page and find out how you can help. And what's really important here is the funds there go to help the court case dogs and other dogs impacted by violence, because we have given the court case dogs lifetime behavioral support wherever they go. And it could be something as silly as we've got a baby and we need some help and we send a trainer free of charge. So helping families in communities, and that's where the money goes. We really would love to have your help, and we'd love to have you there. You'll even get to meet some court case dogs from our past.
Yeah, and you know I would be there for the like third year in a row or something. I'm at a conference out of town. Unfortunately, but I would be there because this organization is very important to support. Give us the website one more time and the date of the event.
Okay, it's safehumanechicago.org, and the date is Thursday, September 12th, 2024.
All right, Cynthia, always good to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Cynthia Bathurst is actually quite incredible. She's been committed to this idea and has followed through on it. You know, way back when, I don't know how many years ago it was, maybe 15 years ago or near that, I remember meeting with her. There was one other person there as well. And we were talking about as an outcome of this dog advisory work group, what would come next? The dog advisory work group, our primary mission was to create dog-friendly areas or dog parks in Chicago. And once the Chicago Park District said yes to rules, by the way, which I think are antiquated and not even-handed, so if a community doesn't have resources, they're not as likely to create a dog park in Chicago, and that's got to change. Anyway, we said, okay, we've got the dog parks. What do we do next? And Cynthia had this idea of dealing with these court case dogs, these dogs that unfortunately, sadly, shockingly, tragically would languish. And it happens all over the country. At least it did at that point in animal control facilities because they were considered objects of the court. That's right, objects. Well, they're not objects, right? They're dogs. And these dogs didn't do anything wrong. So they're being held as if they were the criminal. It's crazy, but that was the law. And Cynthia and others went about to change that law. Congratulations to all the great work Safe Humane Chicago has done and continues to do. I don't know, maybe we're moving in the direction of South Korea. Here's what I mean. Walking down the street, have you noticed that there are more pet strollers, cats, dogs in strollers than ever before? Well, according to the Korean Times on Gmarket, that's a Korean online market platform like their Amazon, I guess. So far this year, 57% of strollers are sold for dogs or cats and not babies. There are more pet strollers in South Korea than baby strollers, and we're moving that way in America. And I love it. I think that it's great for the right cats to be outdoors for enrichment. Listen, if they're not enjoying it, completely different story. And for older dogs, especially, they can't easily take long walks, right? They can barely take walks if we're talking about some geriatric dogs. Well, this way they get out and they get to be with you and you get to be with them and you still get your exercise. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early on WGN.